The Boy Scout motto is, be prepared. However, sometimes events happen that we've got no frame of reference for, so therefore, we can't be prepared for them. Sometimes these events are very personal, and we've got to deal with it as it happens with friends and family. But other events happen on a mass scale, and then we deal with them as a society. We generally call these disasters, natural disasters, or man-made disasters. And through these disasters, we learn and adapt and move on. And part of that moving on process is the remembrance of certain events. For instance, where you were when things happened. Where were you when the I-35 bridge collapsed? And do you remember them closing the bridge in St. Cloud over the Mississippi because it was of the same design? Where were you during the Halloween blizzard of 1991? And do you start packing your winter gear into your car a little earlier nowadays? All of us have these stories. And recently, the Minnesota Historical Society has been collecting these stories, and they've created an exhibit which will be traveling around the state featuring various Minnesota disasters and how local communities have coped with them. From now until March 18th, the Minnesota Disasters exhibit will be at the Stearns History Museum in St. Cloud. Using photos, text, and film, Minnesota Disasters explores the preparation, reaction, and aftermath to various catastrophes in our state. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's news feature, I'll be visiting with the staff of the Stearns History Museum regarding the Minnesota disasters, as well as some of the other programs that the museum is hosting in the near future. Let's start off today talking with Anne Moline as we stand in the midst of the Minnesota Disasters exhibit.
My name is Anne Moline, and I am the deputy director of the museum, and one of my main focuses is the exhibit gallery. So I'm the person that assembles, builds whatever needs to be done in the exhibit gallery, organizes artifacts, etc.
Oh, yeah, quite a lot of stuff in here.
We do. We do have. And this is only a small portion of our collection. We have about 20,000 three-dimensional objects in the collection. And although not all of them are workable for exhibits because they don't necessarily fit into a storyline, we're here to preserve and for other generations. So that's part of the job of the History Museum.
And this exhibit that we're standing around in right now, the Minnesota Disasters. Can you tell us a little bit about that, where that's coming from, and what are the different disasters that we have listed here?
Certainly. Minnesota Disasters is actually from the Minnesota Historical Society, and it is funded by legacy dollars, which we all contribute to when we pay our taxes, our sales tax. And I have to say that it's been a godsend to museums and historic preservation organizations throughout the state. It is a wonderful exhibit in part of a series of exhibits that will be traveling around Minnesota to historical organizations, libraries, etc. Minnesota Disasters addresses the typical floods, tornadoes, and the like in Minnesota. It happens to mention a couple of things that have struck the Stearns County area. One is a grasshopper plague, and the other is the 1886 cyclone, which decimated Sauk Rapids and in turn turned St. Cloud into the center of commerce. You know, it took so long for Sauk Rapids to recover that commerce started to develop on this side of the river, and, you know, we obviously see the results today. As this is the bigger city, the county seat of Stearns County, and et cetera. So that's what the exhibit is about. And then we've supplemented it with some of our own pieces and our own photographs. We have photographs from the Holy Angels Church fire in 1933, and fire struck and burned down the church. And we have some flood pictures. We do have pictures of the 1886 cyclone, and, you know, just coming to see those photos is worth, you know, a visit to the museum. And then we also have some photographs of the Armistice Day blizzard, as well as a couple of other major snowstorms that occurred in Stearns County, or in St. Cloud particularly. And those photos are actually from the Myron Hall collection, which so many people are familiar with. Myron Hall was a Times photographer for decades, and we have his entire collection here. So they're, you know, again, invaluable resource for us in the exhibits department. And then we pulled out artifacts. You know, we're standing right by an exhibit case that has a shawl that was found after the 1886 tornado. And it was found in somebody's yard and brought to a place where people could claim their items, and no one picked it up. So this family kept it and eventually donated it here. And then we have this lovely little dress that was worn by a little girl. And her name, in 1902, her name was Pauline Lauer. In 1902, she was sitting in a classroom, and a storm came up, and lightning came down the chimney into the fire unit, the stove, and when it slid across the room and struck her in the arm and burned her badly, and we have her dress, and you can see the burn. And it also hit three other little girls by her. A couple of them, they burned their bottoms, and another little girl burned her legs. So the family saved the dress and ultimately donated it to us. So, you know, that's a piece of the disaster story of Stearns County. And we have some pieces from the Holy Angels fire in exhibit cases, as well as some pieces from the cyclone. And to add to the exhibit, so we've been able to add pieces. We actually have a medallion from the Assumption Chapel, which was built as people were praying for the grasshoppers to leave Stearns County. And they said, if you take these horrible grasshoppers that are eating everything in sight and destroying our crops, if you take them away, we'll build you a chapel. They built the chapel, the Assumption Chapel, and a few years later, a tornado came and destroyed the chapel, and we have actually a piece from that chapel. So it's actually, a two-disaster artifact.
Yeah, the grasshopper plague, this is something that maybe some folks aren't necessarily familiar with, unless you've read the writing from Laura Ingalls Wilder. She does touch on it in one of the Little House on the Prairie books, On the Banks of Plum Creek. And this was quite the devastating event in the late 1800s for the people in Minnesota. This was a multi-year event that, well, the grasshoppers, they ate everything. And it kind of almost led to human starvation. What more information does the museum have on the grasshopper plague?
Well, the grasshopper plague actually came in two waves. And it came across the Midwest, and there were just hordes and hordes of grasshoppers. They covered decimated fields. They'd land on clothing, and your clothing would basically be eaten up because it was cotton. It was natural fiber. They would cover fences, and there would be so many of these, like 50 of them per square, maybe per square inch, and it would literally knock over the fences, and they would cover houses and get in your mouth and in your eyes. And so this happened twice in Minnesota history. The response from the people of Stearns County was doing this big prayer event, and there are two chapels. There's actually the Assumption Chapel, and there's also a chapel in Cold Spring, which is beautiful. It's a little chapel on a hill. So we've got, so that's an amazing story of the grasshopper plague and what it did to the Midwest. There is the Milford Mine disaster, which happened in 1924. And that, that's talked about in the MHS exhibit and the Minnesota Historical Society exhibit. They talk about floods and other, like I said, the cyclone and other disasters that have hit the state, fires, etc. And it's really fascinating, and it comes with a really nice video component, so you can actually, there are six different short videos that talk about and personalize the stories from those disasters, and they're really, really interesting to watch. And one recognizes how fragile we are as human beings. We can do all sorts of amazing things, but Mother Nature really rules the roost.
Yep. Oh, yeah, for sure. You think about just, we haven't had anything intense really happen in a while. And especially this winter has been very mild. So, we get a little complacent, I guess.
We do. And although a mild winter this year could, down the pike, cause something else to happen. I just and change the dynamics of the environment, and so we don't know, you know, where that's going to end up. So, yeah, so again, this has been really fascinating. You know, everyone has probably either been in one or been close to one, you know, or post-event. I was down a week after Hurricane Andrew hit Florida and to visit my brother whose house was flattened. And it's amazing what Mother Nature will do and, you know, and how little control you have.
Well, yeah. I went down to, I used to live in New Orleans. I went down there after Katrina, and it's just, it is amazing. It's just, you know, we live here, but we don't own this place.
You're right. We don't own this place. Yeah. We don't. And this really points it out. It really points it out. And also, you know, our ability as human beings to survive. I mean, it, you know, you're devastated. And they don't talk about the survival part, but you know that those towns have rebuilt. You know that families have gone on, even though they've lost loved ones. So it really speaks to our strength as human beings and how communities gather together. But in fact, how powerless we are in the face of those kinds of things. And now with weather, we certainly have systems set up to warn people. Where, you know, in the case of the cyclone or a snowstorm, we always didn't have that information. But it still has an effect. You can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the photos here of the different snowstorms. You know, the Armistice storm and the one from 65. I think there's some photos around here from the Halloween blizzard, too. So... yeah, so some of these are just incredible. The snow is above people's heads.
Well, and we don't remember, you know, I don't remember as an adult those kinds of storms. I remember those as a child. I remember, you know, or it seemed to me that the snow was a lot deeper and there were, you know, there were bigger storms in those days. And so it's quite amazing. And we have, you know, the snow plows work harder. We're more focused on keeping streets clean nowadays, so maybe we don't feel the impact quite as much, but it's still there, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to have horrible storms next year.
Oh yeah, this year everybody's like, winter, what happened?
What's that? Yeah, the only real snow that we have dealt with here is in our lobby where we have our sort of winter lights and winter exhibit that we keep up through the month of February, but that's about it.
Yep. The museum's got to put snow in the library or the lobby.
Exactly, and have a sleigh in the lobby. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and in today's news feature, I'm visiting with Anne Moline from the Stearns County History Museum, and we've been talking about the Minnesota Historical Society's Minnesota Disaster Exhibit, which will be at the museum through March 18th. But the Stearns History Museum also has a plethora of other exhibits that are ongoing that celebrate our cultural heritage of central Minnesota. So, Anne, what other activities and events does the museum have coming up in the near future?
Well, I'm actually right now working on an exhibit with the Girl Scouts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Lakes, and Pines to celebrate their 100th anniversary of Girl Scouting. And so we're dismantling our 75th anniversary exhibit, and the Girl Scout office has collected uniforms, et cetera, of you know, their memorabilia from their 1912 on. And then we're going to put that on exhibit, but we're also going to be talking about the life of girls and how the two paralleled each other, what Girl Scouts was teaching and what girls were, you know, living at the time, at the different time periods. So it's about Girl Scouting, but it's about girls too, because obviously they've adjusted to the changing times. The organization has adjusted to the changing times, and girls have changed tremendously. You know, they have a new badge and technology, I understand. They've redone all their badges for the year or for the future. So, you know, that's major, and it's all about how girls have changed. And then we're going to do something with the municipal band this summer, and they have a 100th anniversary. So it seems there's a lot of anniversaries coming up that we make an effort to do something, if possible, with organizations in the community to celebrate those things.
Well, when do you think those exhibits are going to get open?
Well, the Girl Scouts opens on May 12th, and the band exhibit opens mid-June, I think about the 16th of June, and they're going to kick it off with a concert on our plaza, weather permitting. Otherwise, we'll try to find a space in the building for that. So those are the two that are coming up to keep your eyes open. And then we're bringing two more of these legacy-funded Minnesota Historical Society exhibits here. We're doing one on the home front, which is post-World War II and World War II, and then we're going to do something on the Depression. So they have two more exhibits coming up. But that will be in the next about year and a half. And we'll do the like thing. We'll pull things from our collection and photographs and put something together for those events. But, you know, like I said, they're wonderful exhibits that have been produced, and they allow small museums or mid-sized museums to supplement them with photographs and programs. And so we're happy to be part of that initiative. And the Minnesota Historical Society does wonderful work, it's thrilling to have such an active organization in the state. Other states don't necessarily do that, but we certainly have a star in our state, and their support of smaller museums is really remarkable, particularly the videos that go with it. You know, there was a storm, I believe it was I'm not sure the dates right now until I would turn on the video. It was about 1888, and it was a winter storm that came through the Midwest, and half of the people who died in the storm were children on their way home from school. So that's a really poignant story, and that's all on video. So they have six different video pieces that go with this that you can just push a button and watch and listen. And they're really a really important and good element to this exhibit.
And with that, we're going to listen to one of the videos from the Minnesota Disasters exhibit, which is produced by the Minnesota Historical Society, and is talking about the Armistice Day blizzard of 1940. The video also includes numerous photographs of the aftermath of the snowstorm and is truly an amazing piece to witness. And this is, of course, available at the Stearns History Museum as part of this exhibit.
On November 11th of each year, Americans celebrate Veterans Day, acknowledging the services and sacrifices of the men and women of the American military. Originally known as Armistice Day, the history of Veterans Day dates back to 1919, the one-year anniversary of the signing of the armistice between the Allied forces and Germany that effectively ended World War I. But in the minds of many Minnesotans, Armistice Day evokes something different: the memories of a powerful winter storm that exploded over Minnesota and much of the upper Midwest on November 11, 1940. A storm remembered today as the Armistice Day Blizzard. The weather during the autumn of 1940 had been pleasant, and on Monday, November 11th, Minnesota residents awoke to temperatures in the 50s. Although forecasts called for cold and windy conditions moving in, many Twin Cities workers left their coats at home as they headed off Monday morning to begin their work week. Around lunchtime, temperatures in southern Minnesota dropped off significantly as cold rain rapidly changed from sleet to snow. By mid-afternoon, wind and snow were blowing through the streets of downtown Minneapolis. Some businesses closed their doors early, sending workers out into the storm, and by nightfall, public transportation had come to a standstill. Motorists abandoned their cars as howling winds and drifting snow forced stranded travelers to take refuge in temporary shelters. Those fortunate enough to make it home spent the night watching the snow pile up outside their windows. On the morning of the 12th, citizens across the state from Madison to Hibbing began the long process of digging out. More than 16 inches of snow had fallen in Minneapolis, while areas outside the Twin Cities were contending with drifts as high as 20 feet. Highways were clogged with abandoned vehicles, and downed lines left many Minnesotans without electricity and telephone service. Buried automobiles and impassable roads forced people to come up with other forms of transportation. Slowly, details of tragedy began filtering in. 25 miles southwest of St. Cloud in the town of Watkins, a train collision had killed two railroad employees while dozens of rescued passengers sought refuge with local townspeople. Meanwhile, a more serious situation was unfolding in southeastern Minnesota. Pleasant weather during the early part of Armistice Day made for ideal hunting conditions. Large flocks of ducks following their regular migration pattern funneled down the Mississippi River Valley, attracting many hunters out into the bottomlands of the river basin. Weather conditions along the Mississippi deteriorated so rapidly that numerous hunters became stranded along the banks and islands of the river. Trapped overnight without shelter or winter clothing, many hunters succumbed to exposure. More than 150 people lost their lives during the Armistice Day blizzard. 49 of those deaths occurred in Minnesota, with nearly half that number being duck hunters who froze to death along the Mississippi River Valley. The impact of events of November 11th and 12th, 1940, led to a change in Minnesota weather forecasting. Just a day and a half before the storm, the Minneapolis Tribune's printed forecast mentioned colder temperatures with snow flurries without any indication of an impending blizzard. Twin Cities forecasts at the time came directly out of the U.S. Weather Bureau's Chicago office, which happened to be closed as the storm rapidly intensified on the evening of November 10th. In the aftermath of the blizzard, the Chicago office increased its operation to 24 hours, while the Weather Bureau allowed its Twin Cities branch to begin issuing local forecasts. During the past 70 years, other notable storms have swept across Minnesota. However, the severity, surprise, and death toll of the Armistice Day blizzard resonates with many as the worst winter storm in Minnesota history. From the Minnesota Historical Society Collections Department, I'm Tony Crochelle.
This, as well as many other videos, are all part of the Minnesota Disasters Traveling Exhibit from the Minnesota Historical Society. It'll be at the Stearns History Museum until March 18th, and also has many educational resources attached with it, including teacher tools, suggested readings, and other programming ideas. The Minnesota Historical Society Traveling Exhibits program is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund through a vote of Minnesotans on November 4th, 2008, and is administered by the Minnesota Historical Society. You can find a whole lot more information on the Minnesota Historical Society on their website at www.mnhs.org. And you can also visit the Stearns History Museum website for information on this exhibit, as well as the Year of the Girl exhibit about Girl Scouts in Minnesota, their ongoing book club program, their genealogical files, newspapers, and oral history tapes, as well as over 500,000 photographs, and Think Fossils with Stan Lewis. On the Stearns History Museum website at www.stearns-museum.org. And then you can always give them a call at 320-253-8424. Stearns History Museum is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and then on Sundays from noon until 5 p.m. This has been Jeff Carmack reporting on Arts and Cultural Heritage for KVSC News. This report was made possible through funding through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It has been produced by KVSC, a proud member of AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities.